This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 292 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. Do you have any announcements this week?
No.
Well, I will say that they are officially filming season 5.
Mm-hmm.
That's been posted everywhere. Sam's been very active on Instagram, apparently.
Oh,
you're drinking whiskey.
I am, and it's not... I mean, I like whiskey, but it's not because I want to, like, suckle at the teat of a whiskey nurse. I just, like, it is
That's not
something
a thing.
I want... I know, but it's like, I have to almost suffer through it. It's not my favorite whiskey. It's a decent one, but it's a little borderline ashy, peaty, smoky, mossy. Probably peaty. A little bit borderline peaty. Oh, okay. Yeah. And so the reason is, besides the fact that I haven't done it in dog's ears, like, definitely I don't think I've had any whiskey in 2019 yet. I don't think. I did it for two reasons. One, practice. Two, medicinally. As I said, my hand hurts. Oh, you did. Oh, yeah. I posted it too. Yeah, I posted it. Okay.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free.
While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all your profits.
Plus, there's no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level.
The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data, and place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections, such as 100 Most Popular.
With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you'll never miss the right moment to invest.
Robinhood is giving listeners of the Outlander podcast a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at outlander.robinhood.com.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are continuing our The Fiery Cross read-along with Chapter 13, entitled Beans and Barbecue. This was a long one, y'all. Davina... God bless you. But this was almost a 2 hour listen.
There are some times when I'm glad that I don't. I mean, I listen. I'm an audiophile first and foremost. As far as my preferred mode of consumption is audio, because I can either, I don't have to be doing other things, but I can. Like, I can be driving, or I can be, you know, cooking or doing the dishes or doing something and still have my attention go to the thing I'm listening to. But when I take notes, as I said before, I have to read it because I need, if I listen, if I tried to, it's just, it would be a mess. It would be a hot mess. So for that reason, I am glad. Number one, it wouldn't work. Number two, though, oh my gosh, I could not imagine listening to take notes. It would be so long.
It was. I switched.
It was.
I switched to the book. About an hour in, I had to switch to reading because I was like, you know what, Davina, I love you. However, I have to read it myself because this is taking too long and I'm running out of time.
So the chapter starts and guess what? It's still the same day.
Not for almost over, though. It's dark. It's nighttime.
But remember what our friend Michael M. said? Supposedly, this gathering goes through chapter 17. We're not done. Claire was having a moment. Remember, at the end of last chapter, the last chapter began with Claire being frazzled and Jamie working to defrazzle her, to help calm her. And then by the end, everyone and their dogs come into Jamie to say, Jamie, can you take care of this? Jamie, can you take care of that? Jamie, can you take care of this? And Claire has been calmed and Jamie's a little, not perturbed, I would say, approaching frazzledness. Well, so that was where we left our characters last chapter. But he's gone to take care of some of the shiz. He decided that probably was most important to go to the Rosamund Lindsay and Ronnie Sinclair mishmash because there was an axe involved and that could be bad. So Claire returns to the camp with that blasted kettle that burned her. She performs triage on the scenarios as Jamie had done. And she's like, okay, where would my efforts best be put? Like going here, going there, going that. And she decides also to go to Rosamund Lindsay to see about the axe situation since, you know, she's a doctor. She, in case there's blood, she could help out. And she sees Jamie there. Jamie had gotten the axe away from Ronnie Sinclair. And Rosamund Lindsay, it seems the whole stramash was about the fact that Rosamund Lindsay is prepping, standing in this, I guess, barbecue pit. And she's prepping
barbecuing wrong.
Her pigs.
And this is a well-known argument because there are... So, well, there's two main, and I'm probably going to get people commenting back and saying there's more than two or you're forgetting this, but there are two main types of barbecue, and that is the vinegar-based and the barbecue-based, the more of a sweet barbecue sauce taste. So you have the more vinegary sauce, and then you have the barbecue, the more traditional, sweeter tomato-based barbecue sauce. So those are the two main applications of barbecue that I am familiar with, and I believe that there is, and I'm gonna have to look it up. But I think it's like Kansas City. Hang on, I'm not gonna say anything until I look it up for sure.
I'm just over here choking on this whiskey. I promise it's not awful. It's just, dude, I seriously, if we're out, like we're going to Pod Abroad pretty soon. If we're out and about and you see us and you want to have a drink with us or a meal, whatever, we're good. We're easy, not really, but. We'll sit with you, have a meal, chat Outlander, chat travel, whatever. If you want to buy us a whiskey, well, not Summer. Summer,
don't
not,
do it.
That's a waste.
Don't do it. Please don't.
It's a waste. If you want to buy me a whiskey, that's great. Please give me a choice, though, because if it's anything with Ashley PD Smoky Mousy, I can't.
I
really can't.
I will suffer through any beer and almost any wine unless it is, quote unquote, described as earthy, because then it tastes like dirt. But I will suffer through almost all of that. But there's, and I suffer through whiskey for you people. For our listeners, I suffer through whiskey all the time. But it is not my favorite. So I would rather save your pocketbook, because drams of whiskey are not always cheap. I would rather save your money and just get me like a beer.
A scone.
A beer or a wine. Or
yeah, a scone.
Okay. So I'm going to backpedal a little bit here. So I looked it up and it says, per Google, regional barbecue sauce styles include Eastern North Carolina vinegar sauce. Spicy, acidic African flavor profile was readily adopted in Eastern North Carolina. There's Piedmont or Lexington style dip. The South Carolina style mustard sauce.
Say that again.
It says Piedmont or Lexington style dip.
Okay, so you had fun saying Lexington both times. And the first time you said dip, you said dip. I was like, dip. I just wanted to see if you say it again. But you didn't. But you did have fun with Lexington twice, so go for it.
Yeah. And then South Carolina style mustard sauce. Texas style mop or basting sauce. Kansas City style, like I said, I did say that one right. Kansas City, and that's Missouri. Alabama white sauce. Never heard of that.
Oh, Lord, that's interesting.
Yeah, never heard of that. It says a... It's described as a pasty mixture of mayonnaise, vinegar, and pepper. Best applied to smoked chicken, though pork will also do. It is served thick and creamy or milky and is an anomaly in the class of American sauces. Additional
lots
notes.
Of sauces.
Yeah. But the two that I am most familiar with are your Kansas City style sauce, which is a thick, sweet, tangy sauce, and the vinegar sauce, the Eastern North Carolina vinegar sauce. Spicy, acidic African flavor profile that was readily adopted. Considered to be the mother of all American barbecue sauces, but it uses no tomatoes. So for
apparently, it's not only like there are two or more, but at least for the purposes of this chapter, two strong camps. Rosamund, here's the thing. Rosamund definitely, and Ronnie, they were, I don't know about equally, but probably decently equally passionate about their camp, right? But Ronnie was the one, I think, because Jamie had taken the axe away from him. Ronnie was the one who was like ready to kill over it. Now, I think Rosamund could have taken him out with her hand. But that's beside the point. My point is he was the only one, at least that I gleaned from the chapter, who was actually going, he was literally, I mean, he had to keep, like, Jamie had to keep holding him back, even though he already had the axe from him. So no.
He was standing there mansplaining barbecue to someone who was clearly qualified to make barbecue.
Who's clearly in it up to her pits. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's actually funny. So do you guys have a camp? Summer, do you have a camp? Which camp are you? Or do you not want to get involved?
I mean, I think everyone has been exposed to their particular regional style. I know that until I went to North Carolina, I had never had a vinegar-based sauce.
Is it good, though?
I mean, if you like vinegar.
Oh, I'm kind of a vinegar.
Yeah. And then there's also, but there's so many different types of sauces. Like, there's mustard-based sauces. There's obviously your ketchup-based sauces. There's tomato-based sauces. There's all kinds of stuff. I am partial to a sweet, hot, a little spicy barbecue sauce.
Isn't that kind of what we're used to here in California? I mean, I'm sure California has a range if you go look for it.
California is all kinds of messed up. It really is, because we call everything that's cooked on a grill barbecue, and that is not what barbecue is.
That's funny.
So
barbecue is like ribs, right?
Barbecue is the sauce and the meat. It's like you can smoke like pork shoulders, ribs. You can barbecue, but just throwing meat on a grill is not barbecuing. And usually you smoke your barbecue and you sauce it afterwards, the end. But it is a process. But if you were just cooking on a barbecue grill, it's called grilling out, because you're grilling outside. You're grilling out.
As the Germans say, grillen, they got it right.
Whereas barbecue is generally a sauce or, you know, a specific type of meat.
Since I'm vegetarian, it's been like, oh Lord, many years. When I enjoy, I don't know if, I guess you wouldn't call it a true barbecue, but when I enjoy something grilled, that's the closest thing I would get to a barbecue something. It's, and I know it sounds really gross, but I love me some marinated tofu.
Ugh.
It grills decently, but I also love, and I'm using this correctly, I also love grilled, huh?
I just have images of like the Play-Doh factory where you squeeze. Play-Doh, because tofu is.
You're thinking of silken tofu. Not all tofu is really soft.
Yeah, I know.
There's
just
hard.
When you say barbecued tofu, I'm imagining tofu just sliding through the grates into the fire.
Summer.
Like a Play-Doh factory.
That's called waste.
Well, waste not, want not, and I want not.
So they, Ronnie thinks, Rosamund's in the pit, like literally up to her pits, in the pit, up to her pits, in sauce, hog, everything. And she's got her own recipe. Ronnie thinks she's poisoning the food. They disagreed how to sass the barbecue hog.
Do we think, does this go back to people thinking tomatoes were poisonous?
I think so. Because I think he mentioned
her sweet tomato-based sauce. And he hadn't even tried it yet. And I bet it was going to be amazing. Because the sugar sauce caramelizes and
I think probably twofold. Threefold. Number one, it was not what he was used to. And so that can make it seem wrong, right? Because you're like, you're doing it wrong. If you brought up a certain way, that's not right. So number one, it was not what he was used to. So it seemed wrong. Number two, yes, if it involved the tomatoes, then remember this conversation has come up numerous times in the books where Claire and Jamie, I think Claire had to convince Jamie that they were okay. But if not, I know that Claire has had to convince people that they were okay and that they would not poison them. So if you're kind of scared of eating them, then yeah, I could see how number one is like poison tomato. Hello. And also you're just not doing that right.
Yeah, this is, I see this guy as the type of guy who brings his own lunch to a potluck because he doesn't trust anybody else's cooking.
Erica B. writes, clearly Ronnie has yet to have barbecue sauce. I think he will be pleasantly surprised as this sauce sounds delicious. Well, Erica B., that's kind of the point Summer was making is that there actually is a long-standing, if not feud, there are camps.
Maybe we just witnessed the birth
of the barbecue fights.
Yeah, the barbecue wars. War.
So not only, and it could be that, it could be the tomatoes, yes, but also the beans, they're poison. And Rosamond comes, or he says they're poison. And Rosamond is from Boston, you know, like Boston baked beans, which probably, I think they have the sweeter version of the tomato-based barbecue sauce, or what yeah. we would consider that. And they're talking about beans. And Claire, 20th century Claire, chimes in. Somebody want to take it away?
Beans, beans. Good for your heart. The more you eat, the more you fart. The more you fart, the better you feel. So let's eat beans at every meal. But I also know the beans, beans, the magical fruit. The more you eat, the more you toot. The more you toot, the better you feel. So let's have beans in every meal.
So, yeah. Do you guys, I'm curious. So, okay. Number one, first question that we'd like your feedback on is, which camp are you in? Or are you in a whole different camp as far as the barbecue stuff goes?
Sauce or the fart sauce?
Do you sing? This is, yes. Did you sing the more you toot or the more you fart? Let us know.
I mean, I sang them both. I was an equal opportunity flatulence.
Toot is funny, but fart is a lot more risque when you're younger.
Toot is pretty much what mom would let us sing. Toot is the family-friendly version. The fart version is what you sing at school with your friends.
That's true. So Jamie gets Rosamond. They have this conversation and yada, yada. By the end of it, Jamie has talked Rosamond into reserving a carcass for the wedding feast later that evening. And Claire's thinking to herself, the weddings may not happen. Father D is gone.
Can we break down the fart song?
Oh, Lord.
I just want to know. It'll be brief. I want to know if the beans are good for your heart because you fart? Or is it beans in general that's good for your heart? Like, is it the protein in the beans? Or is there something in the beans that is good for your heart? Or is it just the act of not holding in a fart that is so good for your heart?
You're so asking the wrong person.
You don't have an opinion? You thought about being medically inclined at one point. You haven't ever
medically,
thought about...
I'm still slightly medically inclined because of all the stuff I'm going through right now. I don't think... tooting or not tooting affects your heart.
I don't know. I think holding farts in could probably damage your heart. Just the stress of it. Just the stress. Just the stress of trying to not fart.
If you guys are holding it in, consider letting every seventh one go. If you're letting them go.
Why seven?
Congratulations. I don't know. Be polite, but also give yourself a break. Okay. So Jamie takes, I don't even know what this says. I wrote, Jamie takes Kay Ronnie away. I know Ronnie. I don't know what Kay's supposed to be. So we'll pretend it's not there. Jamie takes Ronnie away and gives Claire the axe. Jamie wants Claire to tell Brianna to, hey, sing that wee farty song to Roger. The bean song, so that he can put it down in his wee book. Jamie loved it. Jamie laughed. Actually, they all laughed. It really kind of broke the ice there. And then it kind of allowed Jamie to kind of
distract him. Do you imagine like the sheer shock? Because I think
song?
Jamie's the only one who laughed. Everyone else was like, what? This woman, I mean, granted, Claire is always not couth. You know what I mean? She's always a little less feminine than all the rest of the women they come across. So it's not super shocking that she would be the one to do this in their circles. However, I can imagine the sheer shock of hearing a woman, or anyone for that matter, randomly just start singing a fart song.
Gracious. Yeah, that would be definitely shocking. I think having anyone sing it would be surprising, but having a woman who's supposedly who's an upstanding member of society, yeah, maybe a little more. Jamie gets Ronnie as they walk away to talk to Hayes about his father Gavin. Remember, and we get a little reminder about Gavin's hanging at the very beginning of book 4, Drums of Autumn. And he says, it, you know, not just to talk to Hayes, Archie Hayes, about his dad, but remind him, because number one, they wanted to make sure that Archie knew how his dad died, or I think Jamie thinks he knew, but you know, to tell him what the reason was for, because having to be hanged by for being a thief is like really, really low. It's a shameful death. And to balance that out, but also to, you know, to kind of ring out, end on a better note, I guess. Like, don't end on the note that, yeah, your dad died a thief or whatever. He was hanged as a thief. To also mention about their time at Ardsmuir, because that would definitely help bring more meaning and more, maybe a softness to, it would definitely help, you know, give more meaning to his father's life.
Well, it's not only that, but I mean, I think that it rounds him out as a person. So it's more than just because they've been separated for so long. You know what I mean? So yeah. the only news he ever has of his father is that he was transported after the Jacobite rebellion and killed for being a thief and hanged mm-hmm. for being a thief. That's a pretty not awesome story and not something great. Exactly. You know, so it's only a small facet of who he really was. So if nothing else, they're like, let's flesh him out for his son so that he can really know the real or feel like he really knew the real man as opposed to the circumstances of his death.
So Jamie and Ronnie walk off to meet with Hayes. Meanwhile, Claire is back at their campsite. Roger is back from some errands and he's talking with Bree. Now it seems there's a little bit of crosstalk. There's Claire is saying that Jamie has gone to talk to the sheriff, and Bree tells Claire how Roger has been telling Jocasta where she can get off. She says, no, he shouldn't apologize, but Roger's worried that Bree's wedding may be tarnished. Yes, it's Roger and Bree's wedding, but Roger's like, yeah, I want to be married to you, but as far as like needing the pomp and circumstance or having it a certain way, I want you to have, it's important to me that you are happy with this. And so he wasn't not wanting to be married. He totally was. But as far as the experience of the day and its importance, he wanted Bree to have like the best day that she wanted. Claire tells them about Father D and how he'd been arrested. Now, Roger thinks he saw the sheriff. Jamie appears about this time, and Roger describes what he saw. He says that he saw a scrawny man leading McLennan. Remember a number of chapters ago, Abel McLennan, like who lost everything, everyone in his life? He was being led away in handcuffs. That poor man. Jamie corrects them. That's not the sheriff. That's the thief taker. He'll be taking Abel to the nearest magistrate, which means Farquhar Campbell. Jamie says, we'll have a word with Jocasta. So ask her to have a word with Campbell to kind of smooth things over for Abel. And Jamie's like, Roger, can you go do that, please? And Roger's all, So Roger tells Jamie what went down. Everyone has a laugh. I should say Jamie and Claire have a laugh. And Brianna, I don't know how much she is described as having laughed. I know that she was giving Jamie stink eye over the amount that he laughed at Roger's expense, but it was hella funny. So Jamie sends Roger. He's like, fine, I'll go do it. So Jamie sends Roger to see about Campbell, Farquhar Campbell, and he'll go see Jocasta himself. So Jocasta had been successful. They're now reflecting on what happened last chapter, how the conversation or the scene with Jocasta and Roger, Jamie is pretty convinced that it was all, not a setup, but it was all done on purpose.
You can just stop there. Jamie is pretty. Jamie's pretty.
Sorry, I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. What? Basically, the way Diana describes it, Jamie believes that Jocasta had been successful. Because with this quote unquote blow up or this tiff, this fight, people would be talking and they would spread the word of her offer and of his reply. And that would help Roger's reputation. So Jocasta, once again, uses people to get her way. But in this instance, at least Roger and Brianna and her family would benefit from it. So as far as Roger's reputation, Claire's thinking about Roger claiming Jemmy as his own. And she reminisces about how Frank had taken in Brianna. And then Jamie like holds her and he thanks her kind of out of nowhere. Thanks her for his bairns. That was it. I wrote sniff. It's not quite tear prick, but I got a little sniffle. Did you?
No.
Okay. Erica B. writes, oh my gosh, that is the sweetest thing. One that every baby daddy should do at some point. Definitely the king of men, Jamie is. Farquhar Campbell's youngest comes running for Jamie. He's heard where the priest is and he'll take them there. So off they go. It was a smart choice to send the small boy, Claire points out. Easy to overlook a small boy, not so easy to overlook Farquhar or one of his older sons. Jamie is preparing her for the possibility of there, you know what, let's just put it out there. There may be an issue with having a wedding that night. So they get to the spot and Jamie recognizes something, for he says, so that's how it is. A Mr. Randall, I think it's Randall, although they don't tell us, but we've met him before. Mr. Lilywhite of Hillsborough. But what of it? Jamie takes Claire off the path. They need to be strategic about this. Jamie comes up with a plan. Claire is to approach the tent, saying that she has meds for Father D. He wants her to learn why they've taken the priest. And while she does this, Jamie will fetch the bairns. Now, having read the chapter, you know why he fetches the bairns, but he tells Claire none of it. He's just like, it's like Summer and I going, okay, we got to do this. We're going to split up. Ginger, you go do this and find out XYZ. I'm going to go grab some hot tamales. I mean, it makes no sense unless you tell me hot tamales are like the secret thing for getting through a door. I don't know. So he takes off to go get some bairns. Their bairns, someone else's bairns, who knows?
You make really bad plans, by the way.
I'm not planning. I'm just saying. Claire walks up to the tent and introduces herself. Not to the tent, to the dudes.
You introduce yourself to the tent. Hello, tent.
Hello, Flap.
I'm Claire.
The, quote, nasty fat man is Sheriff David Anstruther of Orange County. Another dude comes out. Father D, she finds out, was arrested because any other clergy outside of the Church of England clergy are not allowed to practice their religion in that colony. Erica B writes, so this bit had me curious about what the laws at the time were, and I came across this interesting information. And she provides us with a link, carlana.com and further, and I will include that in the show notes. Life was not easy for these early settlers. They lived under the constant threat of Indian attacks, and they were also dealing with the increasingly heavy burden of excessive taxation by the British. It was not just taxes, but there were vestry taxes. They were paying the salaries of the Anglican clergy within the province. In his epic volumes on the history of North Carolina Baptists, George Washington Pascal wrote that North Carolina's colonial governor, William Tryon, made the primary objective of his administration the establishment of the Church of England as the official state church. The Baptists in North Carolina found themselves in the same boat as the Baptists of Massachusetts, who were forced to pay taxes to support the state church. Because Baptists dared to differ, because they defied the mandate to have their infants baptized in the Anglican Church, it is no wonder that the colonial governor referred to the Baptists as the avowed enemies of the Mother Church and called them, quote, enemies to society and a scandal to common sense, unquote. Baptist ministers, whom he referred to as rascally fellows, were forbidden under heavy penalties of law to officiate at marriages. When Governor William Tryon announced plans to build an opulent palace for himself in New Bern, to be financed by even more taxation, the good Baptists of the Jersey settlement said, enough. I'd be so mad, Erica writes, knowing my tax money was going toward a governor's palace. No one can really No one can really blame the regulators, now can they?
Well, clearly Tryon did.
Claire feigns shock, but presses the need to give Father D his meds. Recent patient, Mr. Goodwin, comes up the path as he tells the other men, like, everything Claire had done for him, like, helped his pulled out his tooth and helped set his arm. This helps soothe Lily White's worries about, you know, this woman who's like wanting to go in and talk to the priest or whatever. Lily White explains, it came to my attention that the priest was being concealed. He was afraid he was going to celebrate mass. Now, Claire contradicts this. She says he was not concealed. He was invited openly by Jocasta. Well, she's finally allowed in. When she gets in the tent, Father D is there with paper and ink sitting in.
Did you forget the part? or we clearly didn't forget it. You just didn't think it was important. But I enjoyed the moment when she outs herself as a Catholic and he starts second guessing her medicinery.
Goodwin does.
Yeah, he's like, you fix. I had a papist fix my tooth. Like he was like rethinking all of the.
I must have missed that line. That's funny. So she gets in the tent. Father D is there with paper and ink, sitting in front of a little table, and he's obviously not writing. The priest was a little worse for the wear. He had been beaten up a little bit. He had resisted arrest, he says. She interrupts his would-be greeting to state her purpose for her listeners. Father D, he's like, I am here to, hello, Father, I am here to, da, 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 you know, kind of interrupting him before he gets a chance to say anything. So she offers him some whiskey. Father D takes it and says that he didn't drink the wine offered by Lily White because, you know, that's kind of odd. The reason he's there, like he can't offer the wine of the host and he's being offered wine. So he's like, yeah, probably best not. And then if I am reading this correctly or understanding this correctly, then hopefully this is correct. So I wrote, then it clicks. He'd been invited by Jocasta to marry herself and Duncan. Well, we knew this. We knew the priest had been invited for that purpose. I believe this is when it clicks to her, but she doesn't say it and Claire doesn't tell us. I'm sorry, Diana does not tell us, so I could be wrong. But there's a little beat in there. If you read this passage here, Claire either says something inwardly to herself or she like makes a face or like cocks her head. There's something she does that I took as, ah, but the fact that she doesn't really explain this away, maybe she doesn't have time. I don't know. I thought right then that something clicked for her, that he had been invited by Jocasta to marry herself to Duncan, to marry her and Duncan, or to witness their marriage.
And that guy is still butthurt that she turned him down?
I'm suggesting that it might have clicked for her here, even though she doesn't say, and Diana does not give us further evidence, that she realized, oh, so Father D was invited by Jocasta to marry herself to Duncan, right? And here this man is being arrested for whatever reason, even if it's a quote unquote legal or legalistic reason, the end effect is that he cannot perform a wedding. And she may not know the reason why, meaning like not the legalistic reason that was given, but the reason why he was arrested is not really the question, right? We have that answer. As true or not true as it may be, it was used and it was legal. The question is not why he was arrested. The question is, why is someone trying to stop a marriage?
Well, and why now? Because he'd been there the whole time.
Yeah, because it was supposed to happen that night. Yeah. So the first thing is, and I may be reading it or understanding it incorrectly, but I thought something clicked there. Maybe it was just like, because see, I don't think it clicked that Jocasta invited him. She already knew that. That was, she said that to the men's face. Like that was not a, oh, I just get it. No, I thought that it clicked like, oh, again, not that she knew the reason why someone was trying to prevent a marriage, but I thought she at least maybe connected the dots of he was invited and now he's arrested. And it's convenient that there's this law because the end effect is that no marriage can take place. Now, what she doesn't know at this point is why someone would want to prevent a marriage, prevent the wedding. But at least I believe if she doesn't, I don't think she's anywhere near the reason why, but I thought it at least clicked for her right about here that it was more than the priest. It was actually, the priest wasn't the target. Jocasta and Duncan's marriage was the target. The reason why, we don't know. So Lily White comes in with Jamie. He told him that because of his esteem for Jocasta, he tried to regularize the priest's presence in the colony. And that by that, he means have him sign that document, sign an oath that he disavows transubstantiation. Of course, he can't do that because that's like him basically disavowing God. It's one of the key tenets of the Catholic Church. So he couldn't do it, especially as a priest. So he would basically remain under arrest or until they, you know, took him out of the colony the next day. So they won't imprison him, but they say he must leave the colony the next day. Now, Jamie tries to see if Father D could stay with them for the night. And that was not an option, unfortunately. And then Jamie tries a different tack. Could the father hear my confession? This works. And before he goes in, Jamie takes Claire aside briefly and says, look, Bree and Marsali have the kids. They're up the path. Once Lily White and the sheriff are gone, bring them in to the tent. So Jamie goes in the tent, turns the lamp out, and he begins his confession somewhat loudly. And as he goes in, I think it was the sheriff, one of the gentlemen, not Lily White, says, what the F is transubstantiation? And the conversation is, I think, hilarious. And once Lily White explains what Catholics believe, hold that to be, that no, not what they believe it to be. Catholics believe in transubstantiation, and what that is X. And he explained what the definition was. And I think it was the same guy. I think it was the sheriff. I could be wrong. One of the other gentlemen says, that's friggin' cannibalism.
Mm-hmm. So Donner Party.
He's like, I know. He's like, look, if this cannibalism, all we have to do, whether we think it's right or not, they believe they're doing it and they're still okay with it. That's against the law. We should like let him do it and catch him in the act. Lily White's no. He says, quote, my instructions are that the priest is not to be allowed to perform any ceremonial and shall be prevented from receiving visitors, unquote. So is there anything or is there any part of that sentence that sticks out to you the most?
Say it again.
My instructions are that the priest is not to be allowed to perform any ceremonial and shall be prevented from receiving visitors.
Well, he's not allowed to perform a wedding.
Mm-hmm. That's a ceremonial.
Ceremonial. Any ceremonies, really. And he's not supposed mm-hmm. to have visitors. But what's sticking out for you? Just that? Or is there something else?
Instructions.
Oh, okay.
Someone told him he's doing this for someone else. So Lily White is not the dude. It's another person. So Jamie begins his extra loud confession and he tells of the time he starts with the time, that time with the butter churn. Now Lily White and the other man leave the path, other men leave the path, and up come Bree and Marsley. They enter the tent and Jamie finishes his confession quickly, takes Germain from Claire. Father D uses whiskey to baptize the bairns. Jamie, as the baptisms are occurring, Jamie is like on.
I had to read the baptisms like three times because I was doing my little speed reading. So I was like content reading, skimming. And I was like, wait, why didn't they did they not baptize Jeremiah? Like, Jemmy? I was like, he never said Jemmy's name. And I read it through like three times and I was like, that's really strange. I think they baptized him too because he didn't object to the whiskey rolling down his face, but he was awake. And then it wasn't until afterwards when Roger asked what they baptized the baby as that I realized that that's why they didn't tell us. I felt really stupid.
Didn't tell us what?
The name? Yeah, during the baptism, the only name that the priest doesn't say out loud in writing is Jemmy's.
Okay, because they wanted to give it to us later on with Roger.
Yes. Like clearly, I think Claire was listening to something else when it was happening because it's her narrative. So that's why they get around not letting us hear it as it's pronounced during the baptism. But I had to read that like three times. I'm like, did I miss it? How did I miss it? Where is it?
So as the baptisms are happening, Jamie is on guard at the tent flap. He unsheathes his dirk in preparation. Quote, I mean to have my grandchildren baptized this night and no one shall prevent it. Unquote. Germain calls the wayward drops of baptismal whiskey that he tastes horse piss. Roger and Fergus were just outside. And I got a little tear prick at the baptizing of Joan when we learn that Marsley has named her after both of her mothers, her true mother and then Mother Claire. That was very sweet. I did get a tear prick there. And Joan shrieks. Everyone freaks. They quickly leave, and Father D resumes his position at the table as the other men come in. On the way out, Marcy tells Brianna that she pinched Joni because it was ill luck for a child not to make a sound when it's baptized. Erica B. writes, when the baptism was happening, I immediately remembered the scene in Spaceballs where Rabbi Tuckman performed, quote, a wedding in a hurry. Do you? Yes. Do you? Yes. Your husband and wife. And everyone cheered or something to that effect. I call this scene baptism in a hurry. Has your daughter watched Spaceballs?
Yes. In fact, every time we drive in the snow, we always sing that song.
Which one?
Spaceballs.
Oh, okay. Jamie and Claire chat about his confession. She's like, yeah, that was me. And he's like, yeah, I know. Roger comes up with Jemmy. And Jamie will speak with Jocasta and have her send a note to Lily White telling her of what she thinks, him, what she thinks of the whole thing about with the priest. So officially, the weddings are off for this evening, at least. Claire tells Jamie about Lily White's instructions, and they chat about marriages delayed. They're walking along with Jem, and Bree's not in sight. Roger says she's gone to run a wee errand. That's a little bit wonky-do, but we'll see. Claire takes Jem to get herself and him taken care of. She has lost one of the pins that's holding her, one of her pads in, one of her claws in place. And Roger finds it on the ground and gives it to her. And Jem also needs a changing. So she takes Jem away and they go to take care of both of them. Meanwhile, she finds the watch chain toy he dropped down his front. It was a watch chain that Roger said that he found. He just kind of realized that Jem had it. Well, at the fire of another family, this family recognized the chain that she has that Jem was playing with as belonging to a Mr. Caldwell, a preacher. And Mr. Caldwell was a Presbyterian. Now it's becoming a little more clear. The wee errand Bree was on, could it possibly have been to get or speak with Caldwell? Jem is, he was hungry, so they fed him, and he's still eating, so she's not going to rush him. So Bree would be the one to have to break the news about her wedding to Jamie. Claire's like, I'm touching that one. She takes the watch chain and says that she's like, I think I might be seeing him somewhat soon. I'm happy to give it to him. Erica B. writes, there appears to be a conspiracy afoot. Someone is preventing the weddings. So we are led to think. Interesting, though, that no one suggested that someone might be blocking Jocasta's nuptials. Only Rogers. So Georgiana had twins. Georgiana is one of the women or family members at the fire camp that Claire went to go change her clute and Jemmy's clute or pin her clute. She had twins, and Erica continues, and they still travel to the gathering? Why? If it were me, I would have said, sorry, family, we're staying home this year. I guess folk just weren't worried about having barons on the side of the road back then. And then non-Catholic wedding in the works? Sounds like a good time. And the gathering still continues on to the next chapter. I am not sure if it will ever end.
And that was chapter 13. Join us next time when we will be continuing our The Fiery Cross read-along with chapters 14 through 17. And those chapters are Happy the Bride, the Moon Shines On, Flames of Declaration, Watchfire, and Watchfire. And that will get us through part two. We will be getting to part two, I should say. The Chieftain's Call. We will begin that the following. Actually, we'll be beginning that when we get back from Scotland. We will finish part one. We will finish part one before we leave for Scotland.
So yeah, we have one more episode before we take a mini hiatus. And we'll try and get up like a little mini. Like last time, I think we had one that stayed up for a few weeks that was called like, it's a mini. We'll try and put another it's a mini up just so you guys know or are reminded that we're gone for a little bit. Yeah.
And if you would like to join us in our read-along as a contributor, if you go to www.outlanderpod.com/fierycross, that should take you to our event page where you can find a link to see the available chapters.
And if you just send a little message on that page, I will add you to our spreadsheet.
And as always, we'd love to have you join us to continue the conversation in our Facebook community. You can join us at outlanderpod.com/group. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.